You're listening to Speechmark, a podcast by Vodafone that delves into the people and technologies behind our connected future. I'm your host, Ellie Williams. Connectivity leaves a mark on everything it touches. This is a podcast about connectivity and the people working on technology that will make society's future ready. I want you to think about the concept of a startup. What words come to mind? Perhaps there's a notion of youthfulness, energy, speed, getting things done. Or maybe it's volatility, fluid structure, the risk of not having the solid financial backing that a large organization possesses. Maybe that terrifies you. Maybe you see it as a springboard into success and fame. Whatever it is, the success of a startup very much depends on the big idea behind it, and the ability to sell that idea to stakeholders, inspiring them to invest their financial capital, which allows the idea to flourish and grow. This source of inspiration and drive comes from an entrepreneurial mindset, commonly seen in that of a founder, a person who founded and leads the startup. So, what would happen if you team up a founder from a startup with someone in a large company? What are the learning points that both sides can take from collaborating with each other? And can they take these learning points back with them to positively impact their own business? It's an experiment being performed in a collaboration which is called Brightsparks.
So the Brightsparks is a mentoring program which we launched this time last year, back in June. And essentially it was a collaboration between Oxford University Innovation and Vodafone, led by the Grip Innovation team. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to find a way in which we could match the brightest brains coming out of Oxford with some of the leading commercial people that were busy at Vodafone. And we believed it provided a match made in heaven, in that Vodafone would be exposed to the latest in disruptive tech and the amazing people behind it, who were often looking for or in need of support in terms of launching a business for the first time. And so for us, it was a win-win scenario, and we're pleased to say that that's really been the case since day one.
Since each startup was at different stages of their development, each would have their different challenges.
What was clear from the outset was that the needs of the startups were really variable. Some were looking for financial guidance, whether that was to raise investment or to plug into their business plan and to help optimize forecasting, whilst others maybe had a strong product roadmap and the bare bones of the company and their financials in place, but were really keen to try and hone their sales and marketing skills and find ways to optimize the delivery and distribution of their products to market. Growing a new business, as I'm sure you're aware, has many challenges. You know, many of these startups are struggling to get investment, are balancing multiple jobs. You know, time can be a challenge. Maybe they don't have the complete skill sets that they need in order to really focus on all areas of the business in order to optimize growth. So whilst they move quickly, it's not a smooth journey by any means. And I think, you know, that people, we've a lot to learn from that. They overcome obstacles on a day-to-day basis. The highs are really high, but the lows can be really low. So, you know, the resilience of an entrepreneur is paramount from the outset.
So there seems to be an opportunity to create a partnership where experience and skills can be transferred between mentor and mentee. Producers Armin and Chris went to meet this partnership face-to-face at the Founders Factory, a funky, youthful enterprise based in Kensington, where startups are incubated and their journey to success is accelerated, either by access to funding or through mentorship. They've already accelerated almost 100 companies. They got to meet the founder of two very different companies, CycleLand, an amazing bike sharing platform, and Greater Change, a platform that brings control and long-term stability back to homeless people.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for joining us this afternoon, for your time as well. So we really appreciate the fact that you're here. Why don't we start off, if you could please introduce yourselves and introduce the startup as well.
I am Agna, co-founder and CEO of CycleLand, and CycleLand started as a peer-to-peer bike sharing platform, but now we've evolved to be a smart mobility platform.
I'm Usman Javed. I'm heading Internet of Things products and solutions for Vodafone globally, and I have this privilege to be mentoring CycleLand for last 7-8 months.
Could you just explain briefly what peer-to-peer cycling means?
Sure. So it's basically like Airbnb for bikes. So if you have a bike in your shed, you can put it on our platform, and then that can enable somebody else to come take it and cycle off.
And are these bikes that people own themselves, or is there a shared scheme of community bikes?
So we basically have started off as peer-to-peer bike sharing and then evolved into community bikes and then actually evolved to work with big fleet owners like Ofo and Mobike. With community bikes, it's basically we own a fleet of bikes that then we sort of lease out in a monthly subscription to accommodation providers, universities. And with enterprise solution, we enable to run profitable bike sharing. So we worked with Ofo first in Oxford, and then with Mobike in Oxford, Cambridge and London. And we're preparing to launch a new fleet with you and our joint venture partner.
Very exciting times indeed then.
It is.
Let's cycle back to the start then. So how did the concept of the startup come up, and what has the journey been like from beginning to present?
Sure. So I studied in Oxford and I got this idea that I wanted to start a startup. Went to California to work for one. I worked for a home robotics company, and then at the time, sharing economy was quite big in the Bay Area. And I thought, well, how come there's Airbnb for spaces, but not for bikes? So I thought, well, if I was to launch this idea, really Oxford, the sort of bike capital of Europe, perhaps is the best place. So I came back here and in 2016 launched CycleEnd. We got incubated by Oxford University Innovation. They've been with us since the beginning. And then, of course, a year later, we got all the news about bike sharing unicorns coming from China, Ofo, Mobike. And we had to think very quickly on our feet. So how do we go about it? How do we adapt to this changing market? And at the time when I was first pitching, people used to walk up to me and be like, well, I love this idea. I really hope it works, but I just don't think that you can make money out of it. And, you know, now we have micromobility. We've got unicorns like Lime, like Bird, who have been the fastest growing companies. So I think it's really has evolved a lot. As such, we also, of course, have evolved together with market, how it is that the best we can enable our peer-to-peer users, but also enterprise clients, as well as communities to run their sort of shared, well-run micromobility schemes.
Okay, so you came up with an idea, and what was the next step of making that idea into an actual startup company?
Yeah, very good question. So I started by basically, like probably everybody does, I set up a website, and on the website said, bike sharing coming soon. I think also the next one, I went to a conference, so I also did my business cards, very important steps. I think what is amazing right now in sort of digital disruption, but also to be in a startup, is that there are so many tools already there that enable you to start a business. So we use ShareTribe for our platform, and it's a Finnish amazing company that enables many marketplaces to run, actually. So yeah, we just set up the marketplace. And then, of course, the next big thing is how do you get people to use that? So first, friends, family, I made my mom sign up, put up her bike. And then, of course, for every entrepreneur, for every founder, you have to think, okay, how do I get validation? You know, so many people have ideas, but how do you turn that into business? For us, it was, we got incubated by Oxford University Innovation. And then around the same time, I recruited my co-founder. And very quickly, also, we signed our first contract, which was very exciting for community bikes. So a little bit of money, a little bit of incubation support. And then pretty soon after, we actually went to raise our first seed round with Cedars Equity Crowdfunding Platform. And then Parkwalker Devices joined us at the very tail of the round. So I guess hitting all these steps, of course, as a founder, you have to figure out how do you make revenues, how do you raise money, how do you get clients, how do you get users and sort of supporters. It's in some ways, it's easy when you look back, you know, when you try to summarize it. But in reality, I suppose everybody has to find the practical ways. How do you do that?
And the Airbnb method of owning the platform but not owning the assets, that's kind of the real big innovation that's hit us in recent years. Probably the USP behind CycleEnd as well then.
Absolutely. I think that in the past few years, we really have seen, you know, it used to be that people said, oh, it will never work that you don't own, I don't know, like music, right? Everybody wants to own it. But nowadays, we just have Spotify and everybody's happy with it, or Tidal, whatever it is that you use. And we see that more and more with so many assets that sharing economy really works for people. And yeah, I think that it's quite an exciting model. As you said, you don't own assets. You enable basically others to either be small entrepreneurs, or we have some people who raise money for charities. We have some people who do it for various other causes. I think that it enables quite a lot of exciting activity.
I think that was a really good introduction to the journey of the company, of how it came to today. But today also, it's being supported by the Bright Spots program. So turning to you, Usman. So the program is all about fostering UK startups with a culture of innovation. Could you give a short explanation as to what is kind of the motivation behind having this program in the first place?
So Vodafone is really a forefront of helping startups to grow and to scale in their business. But at the same time, Vodafone want to also learn from the characteristics of startups. So how can a large company move faster, and how can we build partnership with the up and coming players in the industry? And most of that innovation we see is coming from those startups. So I think it's sort of a two-way relationship with the startup. This is where sort of we started engaging with startups. And Bright Sparks is more sort of an open-ended, I would say, program, where it is all about how can we help those startups to scale. And if there is an opportunity where we can work together, great. But that is not the only objective through this. So I think it's more about, you know, how can we help Cycland to scale? How can we help them with the technology strength and capabilities that we have, and also the expertise that we have accumulated in the space, in Internet of Things, in AI, in machine learning, you know, making that available to startups and to Cycland as the next phase of their growth.
So I suppose a stereotype of a startup is just the fast pace compared to a big company and maybe less red tape. So you've already said you get the energy from Agni. Is there anything as well that you feel you've changed in your day-to-day working at Vodafone that you've been inspired through just rubbing shoulders with startups?
I think there is something that comes to my mind is more willingness to do experimentation. I think the normal corporate life is that you have big projects, big ambitions, and then you try to do it one big goal, you know, with that. I think turning that into more experimenting and smaller steps and iterative, and then keeping the energy high, because you achieve smaller objectives that give you energy to go and target bigger objectives. I think that's a bit of a change in the way of working that I have driven through my team. And that has been enormously successful. So I think Bright Sparks and working with Agni and looking at the approach that the startups take have actually inspired me of the different way of innovating in a large company. And I think we can always have a bit of a startup mentality and way of working even in a large company. I think that is absolutely possible.
What qualities do you think makes a good mentor-mentee relationship?
Well, for me, I think the first one, which is actually true for both, is listening, is actively listening, and listening not just for understanding, but actually looking at the verbal clues, looking at the emotions behind that. I think that is really key. Perhaps it's more for the mentor, I think, active listening than perhaps for the mentee, but I think it's the most important thing. And I think the other thing is making time available, not be in a rush, always have that space. We have two types of one-to-ones. Ones where we're just very quickly talking and just making sure that if there is anything we need from each other, it's there. Then we have longer sessions where, you know, we are giving each other space, I believe. So I think having the time available is really important.
Yeah, and I would add, I think that being a good mentor for an entrepreneur, first of all, I think entrepreneurs are not easy people. You know, it's not to talk bad about entrepreneurs, but as an entrepreneur, you're sort of course, not under a lot of pressure. And you're also perhaps think that you should always know the answers. You should know, you know, what's going on, but you have struggles and sometimes you don't know how to solve, or it takes a few days to solve it, sometimes a few months. And I think that to be a good mentor, it's exactly just to sort of echo what Usman said, that on the one hand, being a good listener and then doing your best to understand whether you can help or whether it's actually just like listening and that's it. And, you know, just you cannot solve all the problems. And unfortunately, Usman has not solved all of our problems. And still, I love our relationship. And I think that it's really amazing. And so I think that being understanding, of course, sometimes you have practical problems, you know, you need some cards. And that is a very practical problem where if you can solve it and you can push it, which was what Usman did, then it's absolutely amazing. It's like one less thing that sort of I have to worry about. But I think sometimes just listening or sometimes even talking and sharing so that I also hear that, okay, other people have problems as well. And, you know, it's there's comfort in that as well. So again, perhaps these two things were on the one hand, practical solutions, where if there is something that a startup is struggling with, whether it's, you know, hiring the right talent, HR problems or product problems or, you know, what have you. But then on the other hand, perhaps, again, shared humanity and understanding and listening. I think that those two, and if you give time, then there's the opportunity for something really great to happen.
You've already touched on it a little bit, but I want to understand a bit more about the major challenges about becoming an entrepreneur, maybe from a less corporate perspective, but more from a personal perspective. I can imagine the startup space is quite saturated in a lot of places. It's very competitive. You hear about the rate at startups starting up and failing is quite high as well. So what are the kind of key barriers? Is it luck or is it something else as well? Is it being heard? Is it trust?
I think from my perspective, you know, watching Agni from a distance of what it looks like to be a startup founder, I think I have picked up maybe two qualities that I've seen in her, which I think perhaps every startup founder need to have. One is clearly multitasking, because in our discussions, she talk about so varied topics of managing the board, managing the funding campaigns, managing the product itself, which is having some technical issues, you know, customer service, marketing. It's so varied as different types of topics that I have seen her to be very much multitasking and maybe doing a role of hundreds of employees in her own self in a single day. And I think the other link to this is you cannot do that if you're not a continuous learner. Because I would expect that when she started, you know, she had certain disciplines where she was good at and the others were all learning ground for her. And I think as continuous learning to be what it become makes you to become thinking as a CFO, what it makes you to become thinking as a chief marketing officer, because those roles are not formally put in place when you are in the startup mode. I think these are the two skills that I've seen. And I think perhaps I don't think of any startup founder who could be successful if they're not multitasking and they're not continuously learning.
Coming up, greater change.
First of all, I want to say thank you very much for taking the time to join Chris and myself today. It's very nice to have all these startups in one room as well and to hear about all the different stories. So starting that off, if you could please introduce yourselves and also introduce the startup.
Sure. So I'm Alex, the founder of Greater Change.
I'm Jonathan, the COO of Greater Change.
Our startup's about helping people move on from homelessness and helping tackle the stigmas of homelessness.
How about if you explain a little bit how the concept of your startup came about and what has the journey been like from that idea to present day?
I guess originally it started, I did homeless outreach at university and I wasn't at all thinking about doing a startup in the space or anything like that. I could see that it was worthwhile and I was enjoying it. So I wanted to get more involved with the local charities there. And I started doing more volunteering. And something I was seeing more and more was that there's a whole lot of public generosity. But then also through volunteering I was doing, I was also seeing people working really hard to get out of homelessness and working with support workers and making loads of great steps on non-financial things, but then hitting financial barriers. So I remember there was somebody who was doing a lot of steps around recovery from addiction, and they needed a passport to keep moving forward. And it took like 4 or 5 months of process and red tape. And it was like, I think £77 that was needed. And it's just this like utterly crazy situation from both a human perspective of like someone having to stay in that situation for the sake of a tiny expenditure. But then also just in terms of finance, it's just ridiculous. Because I mean, different publications have it at different sizes, but it's kind of about £25,000 to £30,000 it costs in services for somebody to be homeless, and then to not spend £77 on helping someone out of it, just crazy. So we wanted to create a system of overcoming these financial barriers things like identification documents, rent deposits, skills courses, whatever the person needed, and then give people a way of contributing towards those to better utilize a lot of underutilized generosity that's out there. So we created a platform to link up people who can offer support and people who need financial support.
And how do people do that? How can people sign up for the platform and how can people offer support?
In terms of signing up for the platform, people work with their support worker. It really varies a lot. Typically a very personal relationship and everybody is very different. So they work with them on different things. Those support workers work often for charities. And normally what we'll do is we'll partner with those charities and then any of their support workers can explain Greater Change to the people they're working with. And the person has the opportunity to join Greater Change if they want to. And the way they sign up is they share whatever they want to. There's no obligation to share anything at all, actually. You can use a kind of an alias for your name and no photo and not share anything. But normally people want to share certain things to help tackle stigmas. The one thing that people do send across and have to know is what they're saving for and how much it's going to cost and what the plan is that when you get that, say, a rental deposit, how that's going to enable you to live sustainably after receiving the funding. And then that's sent across to us and then people start fundraising.
I was going to say, actually, that that's probably actually the most important part, because when Alex first told me about his idea, it was quite early on, I sort of saw the need for it, but I was a little bit skeptical. I was like, oh, well, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. And then he somehow dragged me into the project. But what really convinced me of the power of what we're doing is that we are giving the homeless service user control over their own lives, because they decide what's going to get them out of homelessness, right? They put the plan together with help from the support worker, but it's all about sort of what they want to do, how they want to take that next step. So when we get feedback from the people we've helped, you know, when they successfully move on and they come back to us and they tell us how much they believe in the project because of the control that was given to them, the dignity that was given back to them, it was just really heartening. And that sort of almost just confirms you're going in the right direction when the people you're helping are telling you how it's helped them and how they appreciate the service. So, yeah.
Maybe just give a brief summary of what are kind of the major reasons for homelessness in the UK and potentially what kind of situations they're in where they don't have that sort of independence, where they have to rely on other people to make those decisions for them.
Oh, that's a big question.
I can take the first bit and you can try the second. So in terms of main reasons, I think that actually, I wouldn't say there's a typical reason someone becomes homeless. So what we've seen from both our own program and the people we've supported is a real variety of really quite unique situations leading to someone becoming homeless. And then that's what you see with bigger support services as well. So I think to some extent, it's a mistake to almost break it down and say you've got like these three trigger factors. That is true. There are certain trigger factors, but I think I wouldn't say it's so much a mistake. It's more it oversimplifies someone's life, which is obviously extremely unique. If you were to ask how you got to where you are now, you couldn't just whittle it down to three things. It's like your different stream of situations lead to where you are in your life. I'd say it's really hard to say. And if you were to look at it in a simplified way, I'd say big causes are relationship breakdown, leaving institutions like hospitals, prisons, army, breaking down connections with family. Actually, I think the largest now is literally just ending a private tenancy, where the private tenancy ends and you can't get another one.
Organizations that do primary research, and we're not one of them, but if you look at what Crisis and Shelter do in their research as well, is they don't focus so much, I think, on the root cause of how an individual becomes homeless, perhaps. It's looking at it more from the point of view that, you know, what's keeping them homeless and what's causing the homelessness problem to be as large as it is in the UK. So it's things like there's fundamentally a housing supply issue here. There's also probably to some extent an issue around homelessness policy not sufficiently addressing the needs of potential service users. It's probably also an element of financial resilience that's just not really available to a lot of people these days. So one of the things that you always hear is people don't realize how easy it is to become homeless. Because if you're working poor, which a lot of people are, you're really, really close to becoming homeless, actually. You'd, you know, might not think about it that way, but you really are. So anyone can you know, just have a series of unfortunate events happening to them. And so one of the ladies we've been helping recently, she was literally completely financially independent, had her own place, even ran her own hairdressing business. But the rent on her hairdressing shop went up, so she had to close it. Oh, and then suddenly her flat was being put up for sale so that they can build luxury apartments on that piece of land. And then she got into an accident that resulted in her foot being crushed quite badly, so she couldn't work. And then so suddenly you see this person who's leading a really normal, independent life go from being completely independent to just being on the verge of homelessness within the span of about 3 months, which is crazy, right? It's completely crazy. And she was a small business owner as well. So she wasn't even just someone you would typically think is vulnerable to such things. But all it takes is a couple of triggers and you're there. There are sort of much larger issues at play, and that if we fix these problems, they could become very constructive solutions to homelessness. But yeah, as Alex says, it's important, I think, also not to oversimplify the stories and to think that it's just one root cause that we can tackle. Very often it's not.
Well, now I'll touch on to the mentoring program, because this is not something that a lot of startups have access to. So the Bright Sparks program is all about fostering UK startups with this innovation culture. So what can you tell me about that program and how has it benefited your company having a mentor?
So I think firstly, I think Kike's given about £20 so far, so that's good. But I think beyond that, there are a lot of things that we didn't know we had to do going into this, I think. There are a lot of sort of bite-sized bits of wisdom that you hear floating around the ether when you first get into a startup, don't you? And one of those things is like, oh, you've got to focus. It's very true, but also not very easily actionable, because you're going to get all these really interesting things that you really want to get into, but you can't. And one of the things that Kike has really helped us with, Kike as our mentor, is in keeping us on the straight and narrow and making sure that we're really doing the things that we need to do to get to the place that we really want to get to, and to not sort of spread ourselves too thin and end up just getting nothing done. And then on another level, I think he's also been providing us individual mentoring as well. And that's so invaluable, isn't it? It's like, how do you put a value on not making mistakes? I think that's quite difficult to try to pinpoint exactly the value add that he's had. But at the same time, you wouldn't know that's completely necessary. If you've ever done something that you made a mistake and things just completely collapse and fall apart. So I think that's just completely valuable.
With a mentor, you have so many challenges kind of working in a startup, and also both being quite young, we also don't have that much experience. So it's mainly, for me, the only way to succeed is to kind of keep putting in passion, but also learn really quickly. And I feel like you can't learn quickly unless there's someone to learn from and to guide you through things. So I think a mentor's completely essential, because there's no one to learn from when you're in a startup unless you have a mentor, because you don't have a manager or anything like this, or somebody who's in your company who's done it all before, because it's new. So to have somebody with that experience who's been through a lot of different situations, both in a big professional setting but also in terms of mentoring other startups, I think it's just essential, because otherwise you can't learn effectively.
So we just heard about two very different stories from two very passionate founders, and how they felt a relationship with a mentor has had very big benefits, both from a practical and emotional perspective. We come back into the studio now with Laura for some final words on how the program is doing.
I think the opportunities that have come through have been really exciting, and they've been absolutely far-ranging in terms of effect. In some instances, the Vodafone mentors have helped the startups unlock new funding and investment opportunities, partnerships with Innovate UK, for example, which has been really cool. In other instances, one in particular, we have a commercial agreement now in place, and we're helping power 50,000 connected devices for one of the participants, which is really brilliant. We're also about to embark on a pilot for a community cycle launch at our Newbury campus at Vodafone UK, which is exciting. So really absolutely diverse in terms of outcome, but lots of really positive stuff coming through.
If you liked hearing about these two startups and want to learn more, You can go to their websites, cycle.land or greaterchange.co.uk. Special thanks go to Agnes Milokaite from Cycleland, Alex McCallion and Jonathan Tan from Greater Change, Usman Javid, Kylie Cuff and Laura Turkington. SpeechMark is an experiment from Vodafone, and we hope you enjoyed this as much as we enjoyed making it. So please rate and review so we can make it even better in the future. To find more stories, conversations and insights about the connected digital world, go to gigalife.vodafone.com. This series was brought to you by Chris Jennings, Josie Semple, Armin Badossian, Lucas Sesford, Alex Yobet and Max Thompson, and produced by Paddle Productions. I'm Ellie Williams. Thank you for listening.